Hello, and welcome back to the Paranormal Podcast. My name is Dan Pacella, co-founder, lead investigator for Orange County, New York Paranormal, and on behalf of all of us at Orange County, New York Paranormal, Happy New Year! This is the first episode of 2024, took a couple weeks off, catch a breather there, let everybody enjoy their holiday, which I hope everybody did. But we will be back on the regular schedule of new episodes every other week. So please subscribe, rate, and review. We're on every major podcast platform. There is also a video version of this on our Facebook page and on our YouTube channel. Please subscribe and follow us there as well. And if you follow us on YouTube and Facebook, not only do you get the video version of the podcast, but you also get all of our updates, all of our investigation videos, which we also do that on Instagram as well. So, you know, wherever you're listening to us now, just make sure you're subscribed, make sure you follow, and that way you don't miss a second of anything that the Paranormal Podcast is doing or that we're doing in our continued adventures of the paranormal. So again, Happy New Year, everybody. It's been a nice little break. It's interesting. When we first started this, the off season for us was a lot longer. We didn't really do much, you know, from after the Halloween season to the spring. But as we continue and as we grow, the downtime is getting less and less, which is absolutely great. It's what you want. It's what you hope for. So we're very excited to talk about some of the things that are coming up in 2024 a little bit later in the episode. But we thought the best way to start off the new year would be to do a new mailbag episode. New year, new mailbag. We get so many questions, and we've gotten a lot of questions since the last time we did one of these mailbag episodes. And, you know, we've gone through the Halloween season, we've gone through several investigation videos, and through social media, we get a lot of questions. So decided to once again compile some of the more common questions that we've received and answer them here on this platform because folks ask some great questions. You really do. And we love answering them. And I wish we could answer all of them, but these ones are the most common. If you do have a question for us that you might want to see down the road in a future mailbag episode, please submit that, whether it be through your review of the podcast, as a Facebook comment, as a Facebook message, or as a YouTube comment. Please enter it in. We answer every question we get through social media directly or through email directly. It's just the most common ones I thought we'd put out in an episode of the podcast. So new year, new mailbag. So here we go. So the first question I want to review here is a question that we get from not only events and from places we visit and locations we contact. It's a question we actually get from our family members, too. It was asked to me over the holiday season. What is the deal with the name of this podcast? And as you know, if you're listening, we are the Paranormal Podcast. But if you've ever looked at the title, whether it be where you're listening to it or the logo for the podcast or the name of the video, paranormal, the word itself, there are parentheses. It's parentheses, P-A-R-A, close parentheses, and then normal. So para being in those parentheses in the word paranormal. I've explained it a little bit in the original trailer for the podcast. And I should probably explain it more than I do, because it is kind of what we're trying to do differently around here. And basically the reason we decided to name it that way is because of the number one critique, if you will, that Emily and I receive whenever we meet new people, whether it be at a location, whether it be at an event, whether it be just telling them what it is that we do. People say to us all the time, wow, you guys are just like normal people, huh? And it's interesting. It took us a minute to kind of figure out how to take that, because they're really surprised by that, apparently. But as we've gone through this and as the years have gone by, it's kind of true. As we have progressed and as we have met other people in the paranormal community and as we've interacted with that community and been online with that community, we do not fit into the usual paranormal investigator mold in a lot of ways. And that's both good and bad. And it does make us seem probably more conventional, like the people we're trying to talk to. And, you know, the thing is, if you really, and I did a whole episode on this, but if you really dive in to online, the paranormal community online, the YouTube, the group discussions, even other podcasts and shows, and paranormal television for that matter, there's a lot of drama. A lot of drama. And especially online. A lot of people fighting, a lot of bullying. Weirdly enough, there's a lot of that that's been going on. That needs to end. But demonic talk, spirits communicating, but following people home, and basically everything you've ever seen in an episode of a television show is what the online community is talking about all the time, as if it happens all the time. Now, those things do happen, but just not nearly to the level that it happens in these online. And if you are looking at the paranormal community and you look at some of the stuff that's out there, and there's great stuff out there too, do not get me wrong. But if you look at a lot of it that's out there, you will see that, wow, this community is really strange and really unusual. And no, it really isn't. But it can be represented that way. And Emily and I have no interest in any of it. We love this. It is our passion. It is our hobby. But we don't do any of the drama, any of the judgment, none of it. And we feel there are a lot of people like us and that they are underrepresented. They're interested in the paranormal. They on every level. Some of them just watch casually. Some of them like to do events. Some of them like the show. Some of them like the read. And some of them even go out and investigate. There's a ton of them, people that are like us. You just don't hear from them because either they don't do the online thing, they don't really publish anything they find, or like us, they look at the rest of the community and go, they're just not like me. And that's why we started this. We're just ordinary people with an extraordinary hobby. And just normal people that want to have normal and relatable paranormal conversations for everybody without the drama, without any of the judgment, without any of that. And when it came to naming the podcast, I wanted to reflect that critique, if you will, that, wow, you guys are normal people. Yeah, there's a lot of normal people who love the paranormal, who are passionate about the paranormal. And I wanted this podcast to be a place where everybody could come, regardless of your level of interest, and have normal, relatable conversations about this amazing field. So when I was naming the podcast, which, by the way, is not easy. It's like the hardest part. This whole thing, the setup, the microphone, the lights, the computer, nothing. Child's play. Naming the podcast took months. But I looked at the word paranormal and said, you know what? Yeah, let's go with that. We've been told, wow, you guys are normal so many times. Let's just call it that, because it does reflect the mission statement here, which is that, you know, relatable conversation, that not normal, such a tough word to use, but that sort of, you know, everyday person. We're everyday people who love the paranormal and are into it. And we want to talk to everyone, but we also want to be a place where people like us, everyday normal people with an interest, whether it be a passion or a passing interest, can come, engage in paranormal conversation without the drama, without the judgment, and, you know, free to express opinions and thoughts and listen to our opinions and thoughts on things. And that's why it's called that, the Paranormal Podcast, because I felt that it reflected not only what we're called, but also what we're trying to do. I don't think all the answers are going to be as long-winded as that one, but I'm very passionate about what this podcast is supposed to be and so far is being, is at least in my opinion. So when I get asked that question, I'm glad there was something that I to include in this episode, because I don't think we do the mission statement thing enough. So very glad that I was asked that and gave it a good reason to appear in the episode. So another question we get a lot, and this almost made the first mailbag episode we did like 10 episodes ago, and it is, why do you not live stream your investigations? We don't do that. We've done the occasional Facebook Live, not really when actively investigating. It's something that I've done in the past to kind of put you with us. It's what we try to do with our social media page, get you as close to us as we possibly can get you. It's like why our videos are done the way they're done. We want you to kind of feel what it is to be there. But it's never been like we start investigating, hit play, hit record, or hit stream, and then just does the whole thing. And maybe it's our age. Maybe I'm just not of the TikTok generation. I don't think so. I won't admit it, even if I am. But we've worked with groups who've done that. We've worked with folks who have done live stream for the entire thing. And it's great. It is great to interact in real time with people. It really is. And that's something that when I watched the group that live streamed our whole investigation with them do it, I thought, wow, that's really, talk about a direct contact with the people who are interested in watching this. Even at 2 a.m, there are people watching this. I have a problem with it just from a basic methodology of how we investigate. Basically, the problem I have, and again, the opinions of me, and if you have a conflicting opinion, please express it in a comment in the review. You know, we can have a constructive conversation. And that's the key word there, is constructive. We can respectfully disagree. And that's fine. I love conversation, so I'd love to have one with anyone. But to me, it takes the review out of it. The most important part in how we investigate as a group, which is we are technical, we are scientific, we use equipment, we use recorders, we use cameras. That's how we capture everything. If you are live streaming, in my opinion, you are publishing instantly every single thing that happens in an investigation. So you get all the knee-jerk reactions. Those knee-jerk reactions might be entertaining, but there's no review. There's no chance to do the most important thing, which is, okay, what isn't this? And sometimes in the moment you can debunk, but a lot of times it's sitting here, looking at the screen, watching it slowly, taking an hour or 2 or 3 hours to say, you know what? Yeah, I'm comfortable saying that that might be something that's paranormal. When you're live streaming, you don't have that opportunity. It's published. And once it's out there, it is way harder to go back and say, hey, you know that thing we published? Well, to me, that just hits credibility hard. And we have a hard enough time with credibility in this field. And you know, in the moment, we never really know what's happening. You never know. My team gets angry with me because I'm always thinking it's something else. Even, you know, a full body apparition could high five me and I would spend the rest of that night explaining how that couldn't have been what it looked like. So on a live stream, how do you know what's happening? We barely know what actually happened after we reviewed it, let alone in the moment. So again, publish is the key term here. If you are live streaming something, you are by definition publishing it. But you're publishing it without knowing. And to me, that's reckless. To me, that's where you run into trouble. That's where we get enough of, oh, that was a car driving by, or that was this, or that was that. When you've taken the time to review it before you publish it, you don't get any of that because you get it. Don't get me wrong. You always get it, but it's not, it has much of a less chance of being legitimate when you get it. To each their own, by the way. Again, If you've listened to the podcast in the past, you know that I always say there's 10,000 groups, do it 10,000 ways. I'm cool with all of however you feel this should be done. There's no standardization. I feel personally from our point of view and the way that we try to do things that live streaming a full paranormal investigation is reckless because you don't know what's going to happen and when it's going to happen. Live streaming before it? Absolutely. Hey, if you want to take your followers live to a place you are for a minute or two just to kind of give them the feel, that's awesome. But when you're doing the whole thing, you're really losing out on a chance to do the most important part of the paranormal investigation, which is debunking and disproving what isn't paranormal so that what you say is paranormal actually means something. This next question actually appeared as a comment in one or two of our YouTube videos. And it's one of those things you don't think about when you're doing what we're doing in my spot, which is putting the video together, doing the cameras, and all of that. It's something you don't think about when you're just so used to doing this that it kind of gets lost. But the comment and the question was, why don't you shoot your videos in color? Because they're really grainy. And I looked at that and went, and then I thought, you know what? That's a really good question, especially if somebody's brand new to this whole thing. Why is every video you see on TV, on YouTube, on Twitch, on TikTok, why are all paranormal videos either black and white or pink and purple? And why aren't they in 4K? And why aren't they in color? So it's because of the nature of the cameras. A lot of you probably already know the answer to this. I did a whole episode on why we investigate at night. Check that one out. But it's because of that. It's because of the investigating at night and because we're using night vision cameras and full spectrum cameras. In our videos, and I see a lot of groups do this similarly, anything we can shoot during the day, we do. I usually shoot a brief little piece outside the location or inside the location during the day. It's what I call my We Are Back video because I always start it with the same words, We Are Back. And we use our regular camera sometimes in investigations if we absolutely need to, but we have to have a flashlight with us because your cell phone camera, which let's face it, that's the camera, video camera most of us use now regularly, it would just be a black screen or a very faint screen. And also, not only because you can't really see the living people in a dark room with a cell phone, you're not going to capture as many light anomalies or mist anomalies or any kind of anomalies. You'll catch many fewer with your regular camera. You can still catch. There's plenty of example of great light anomalies that occur in a regular vision camera. However, the vast majority of these things exist in the spectrum just above and just below where the human eye and, for most of the time, your camera's eye can see. And that is the full spectrum, and that is the full spectrum and the IR cameras. So that would explain why some of the footage is grainy. What also explains it why is that I don't have $20,000 cameras. Ghost Adventures has better cameras than I do. So if you're watching a show on the Travel Channel, likely it's not going to be as blurry. The black and white imagery is mostly what is, from a quality perspective, less, I find, at least in our videos. The full spectrum cameras, which look pink or purplish hue, depending on how the IR lights bounce in that day, they're 4K. And I just recently purchased a new night vision camera that is a very higher definition than everything we've used in the past. So you'll have to stay tuned to our next video, and you tell me if it's less grainy. It looks less grainy as I do the review, but so we're trying to make it less grainy, but still be in the spectrum where we can actually see these phenomena occur and where we can see the surrounding areas around us so we can see more of the room. But it is interesting that I hadn't thought of that, but it makes total sense. It makes total sense. If you're relatively new to this field and you haven't, had it ingrained in you for the past 30 years, like I have, or like a lot of us and a lot of you have, it's a very good question, but why aren't these things shot in color? Why are they shot on grainy black and white? Well, I mean, it's because of the nature of the beast and the nature of the time we investigate and the nature of what we're trying to find. That the camera choice, because we investigate in the dark for a lot of reasons that I covered in a previous episode, we have to use those cameras to get the most out of an investigation. Another common question, we got this a lot at usually when we do evidence reveals in public, or we do events, or sometimes even when we meet a location for the first time, is how long does it take to do a paranormal investigation? You could ask every paranormal group that's ever been that question, and they'll probably give you a different answer. For us, and I can only speak for us, it depends on the location, and it also depends on whether we've been there before. A first investigation is always going to take the longest because you have to not only get to know the location, but you have to do a little more fishing, I call it. You know, if you don't know where the hotspots are, they didn't tell you where the hotspots were, you're definitely going to be doing every square foot a lot slower than you would in a location that has a more established haunted history. Now, that's not to say we don't investigate every square foot every time. We do. But when you don't know it, you have to go. So you have to do your EM walkthrough, where you walk through with the electromagnetic detector to try to get a baseline. Is the place baseline at a 0.0 because there's no power in the building, or is there a lot of power in the building? So, you're going to get a 0.2 of milligauss of electromagnetic energy throughout the whole thing. So you have to treat 0.2 as zero. You have to learn those things before you investigate a location for the first time. But if you've been there before, you tend to do just a quick check to make sure nothing has changed. You know where to put the cameras. You know where the hot spots are. So locations like museums, businesses, things like that, larger establishments, they take the longest, but they, and especially if we have been there before or we haven't, they are the longest that it takes to investigate. But the first time is always the longest. Residential investigations really vary as well. For us, the way we've learned to do this is that the first time we do a residential investigation, like, somebody calls me, hey, I think my house is haunted. Can you come and see, I'm hearing voices, just those kind of things. We'll usually go do a very quick run through, like during the day, with a digital recorder and maybe a couple other pieces of equipment, just to see if, mainly we're trying to debunk. We're really trying to be like, okay, well, you're feeling weird here. There's a lot of electromagnetic energy here, or you're hearing this, maybe it's this. And, we're going to try and get to the bottom of it, whether it's paranormal or not. So residential, and then if we find something, then we go into the more traditional investigation mode with everything, all the cameras, all the equipment, the stuff that we would do, when a haunted location is known, you sort of lead with all that stuff. In an residential, that's the second step, is to go in with all of that. So in that one, the first time is much shorter. Traditionally, when we're doing a full investigation, we're not the kind of people who are like, yeah, we got to be here for 15 hours. No, that's not how we do it. We use a lot of cameras. So however long we're investigating, we have every nook and cranny covered for the entirety of that investigation. So, if we actually physically investigate for 6 hours and we have, six cameras recording all of it, well, that's 36 hours of footage, meaning that we investigated that upstairs hallway while we were there and while we weren't there, because we have it covered. But it also depends on the style of the location. Like, if we're in a haunted hotel, we're going to spend the night in the haunted room. We've done that. Heck, that's how we started. Rent a haunted room in a haunted hotel, investigate the room, and then go to sleep in the hotel room. That's how we started when we had one camera and a recorder. That's how it began. That's how a lot of people begin. But if we are in a place that we can spend the night, Yeah, hotel's a no-brainer, but we've done it in different places. The Clifton Theater, after we investigated, we slept on the stage. I think Emily has slept in every single haunted room in Grapevine Farms, except maybe the attic, and Tim is challenging her to do that next time we're there. And it's only because it's really warm up there in the summer and really cold up there in the winter. But, you know, if we don't make it a point to do these things every time, there's no set time of investigation. It all depends on the type of the investigation, whether we've been there before, and what the location is in terms of it being residential or business. But we get, you know, you stay till the job's done. Like, you feel it. You know when you're like, yeah, okay, I think we got it. Like, there's just a moment that occurs where you're like, yeah, or just the opposite. You're like, you know, I know we've been here. It's 2 o'clock in the morning, but I still feel like there's more to find. And that happens too. So the answer to that question is it varies, which is not a really good answer, but it is the answer. And I'll bet you it's the answer for every single paranormal group, regardless of their methodology. And speaking of other groups and methodology, our final question of the mailbag is, do we ever collaborate with other paranormal groups, or are we willing to collaborate with other paranormal groups? We get this from folks who attend our events. We get this from other paranormal groups. The answer is yes. I'm very willing to work with other people. I will say historically, however, the results are mixed. And it's never because of the individual people. I want to make that abundantly clear. I have never met a paranormal investigator person that I've disliked. We all get along, where a lot of us are in the same boat. It's not the people themselves. We all get along. But it is mainly because there's a lot of times you're going to have conflicting methodologies. There's 10,000 groups doing it 10,000 ways. And no two groups do it the same. No two groups have the same definition of what anything is. Did an episode about this way back in the second episode of the podcast about definitions and standardizations. We approach it one way, they approach another, and that's okay. Investigation styles differ. Some people are very much into provocation and being confrontational, as we aren't. We're more of a go with the flow, investigate. We don't do any of that provocation, but some people do. You mix those up, it's going to be a little bit problematic. Some weigh evidence differently, which is really can be an issue. You know, some folks weigh psychic evidence. If they have a medium in their group, they're going to weigh that evidence very heavily. Because of who we are and our stated way of doing things, we don't weigh it very heavily. I need that plus what's coming in on the digital recorder or the camera. So you have, you know, psychic versus tech. You have, you know, experience versus captured. Some groups count the experience into the equation more than others. And some only count what's recorded on a camera or a digital recorder. And honestly, groups even have different goals. You know, we've talked about the difference between ghost hunter and paranormal investigator. You know, are you looking for a picture or are you looking for a story? Are you looking to publish what you find or not? That is a huge thing. And when you publish it, because if you're doing, going back to the last question, a couple questions ago, if you're publishing it instantly, then you're not as interested in the final product. You're interested in the publishing of it instantly. When you publish it, are you publishing what kind of results? Are you going to vet those results? Are you going to look into it? So that's where methodology can become a bit of a sticking point, because you've got two groups to do it completely differently. And there's going to be something in there where one group accepts it one way, one mate accepts it another, and it can lead to conflict of methodology. Again, the people are great. And there's a lot of collaboration that happens in this field. There are actually paranormal groups that are like parent groups where, you know, the main entity is here and then they have like branch groups in other states that they kind of have underneath their wing. Maybe not named the same, but it's like the, you know, the family of brands, if you will, you know, and you know, they go, oh, you're from Indiana. Let me call our Indiana chapter. You know, you're from Ohio. Let me contact them. They're in Ohio. And That's a really good way to have a lot of evidence and a lot of experience and a lot of investigations in under one entity. It's just not something that we've been interested in because, man, that's got to be tough because you've got to find people who are exactly in lockstep with how you do things if you're going to be the parent group of something like that. And that has got to be hard. And I have to imagine the people who actually are good enough to meet that challenge and do that, I imagine it's a headache sometimes for that. But so, yes, we have collaborated with other paranormal groups. Yes, it has been a positive experience every time in terms of the people. But the conflicting methodologies, if we did it more long term, we've done it in kind of one-offs with, some with an event, some with an investigation. They're one-time things. It's very easy. But in terms of like a lasting partnership with two groups, that's something we'd really have to look into because we would have to have a lot in common in a lot of different ways for that to work in the long term, just because everybody does everything so differently in this field. So thank you all so much for those questions. And please keep them coming. Please, when you subscribe, rate, and review to the podcast, you can put a question in the review. We're happy to answer it there, or comment on Facebook, comment on our YouTube channel on this video, or send us a message, Facebook, also through email, through our website. You're more than welcome. There's a lot of ways to get in touch with us if you have a question, and we'll always answer it direct. I will always answer you back, even though the podcast may come out, 3 months later with the question. We don't wait to answer the person who asked it. We put those answers out there. So right before we did, went our little hiatus, the podcast went a hiatus. Orange County, New York Paranormal didn't. We actually did a very rare late December investigation at Farmhouse Floral Design in Middleburg, New York. We investigated there in late December, and we're in the process of reviewing the evidence, and we will be putting that out, of course, after we have a chance to review it with the owners. And it was an interesting location because it was a flower shop, but also a house that's an Airbnb. So it really was two buildings. And a lot of things have been reported in those two buildings. And we had a lot of people there that night. We had, not only Emily and myself, but Tim and Tracy were there. Our daughter even got involved a little bit because she was with us. And we also had the business owners there. We always do that. It's always good to have those folks there. They were able to put a little bit of color on the history. Like when we go in, we only know what we know, but these people live there and they're like human trigger objects. And so we're very much looking forward to finalizing our findings on that one. It was a really interesting investigation. We haven't done a lot of investigations in December, but it was great to get there. We can't thank the ownership enough for having us, and we're looking forward to that. So stay tuned for that. We did put out a video from there, just saying hello late in December. Check that out if you'd like, and that video will be out, in the early part of this current year. And speaking of this current year, we're already busy. It's great. I mean, when we set out on our own, I have to admit, I never thought we would ever be as busy as we are, which is great. And we've booked a half a dozen investigations already for this year, some in new places, some in familiar places, have some really amazing opportunities coming up to investigate some very interesting places and some challenges too, some places to investigate that are a little different in terms of scope and access than we're used to having. So those, for me, from the tech side, that always makes me excited because I love challenging, myself to cover every square inch of something I can't possibly cover every square inch of. But it's not just the investigation side. We almost have a dozen different events booked for the Halloween season already. It's January. That just blew my mind. I'm looking at the calendar, and Emily and I are looking at the calendar the other day, and we're like, holy crap, there's only a couple days left in that weekend days left in that season. And that's fantastic. we love doing those events. We love, that's our time where we can help businesses and museums and charities fundraise in their haunted locations. It's our chance to give back to the locations that are so kind to us and allow us to come out. But to have our October calendar almost full and it's not even February yet, that's awesome. And we're very excited about that. So basically, make sure you're subscribed to us on social media, Facebook, Instagram, and YouTube, because we are going to be all over the place in the coming weeks and months. And the podcast, we will cover it all here too, along with the general topics that we cover. We'll have a regular, you know, main topic episode next week, because again, I wanted to start off the new year by getting some of the questions off of the plate that had been stacking up. And those are the five most common ones. And again, submit any questions you have, but make sure you're following us, because it's going to be a crazy year, and the podcast will follow it all, and so will every other entity that we put updates on. Well, here we are. Brand new year and a brand new episode of the podcast, and a lot of new and exciting challenges ahead in 2024. I am, as I said, glad we had a chance to answer some of the questions that have been sent to us recently. The questions and answers are always great because, of course, in the paranormal world, every time you answer one question, it just leaves you with a dozen more. It's great. It's why it's our passion, and it's how it goes. And in the world of the paranormal, that is, much like we try to be, just normal. Thank you very much for tuning in, and we'll catch you next time on the Paranormal Podcast.